And we'll call the fourth case of the day, Rosen v. Munkin, 084132.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Tom Peters on behalf of the plaintiff.
Good morning, Mr. Peterson.
The judgment of the district court should be reversed because the full faith and credit clause of the United States Constitution requires Illinois to apply and enforce the New York plea agreement in precisely the same manner as New York is applying and enforcing it. And that has not happened in Illinois. By all accounts,
The New York agreement did not purport to apply to Illinois, though.
No, and it doesn't have to. That's the beauty of the full faith and credit clause. Whenever a judgment is entered in one state, it's not necessary for the court to add to the judgment order and, oh, by the way, this applies everywhere else in the country. That's not required in any civil case. It's not required in criminal cases. The full faith and credit clause, by the force of that constitutional command, requires that everyone apply it in precisely the same manner. And in New York, the plaintiff is, as a result of a plea agreement, entered in good faith with the prosecution, approved by the trial court there.
The full faith and credit clause doesn't apply to criminal penalties at all, does it?
I think it does, Your Honor. And it certainly applies in this case. If Your Honor is referring to, I think it's the North Carolina versus, I forgot the last name, that was a case where it said you didn't have to enforce the full faith and credit clause until the issue matured, until there was a requirement of some action by the state. This issue has matured, and there is adverse action by the state of Illinois. So I think that the full faith and credit clause does apply here, and that Illinois is required to honor the New York plea.
What does the Illinois law require as far as registering sex offenders?
The Illinois law, if this offense had been committed in Illinois, would require registration.
What if it's committed in any state and the person moves in without any...
If there were not... The distinction that we're drawing, Your Honor, is this. If, by virtue of some other states of the Illinois statute as compared to another state statute, registration were required here, then registration is required here.
You mean there has to be some sort of reciprocal?
No, I didn't explain that well. If this same offense were committed in New York and there were no plea agreement and therefore no judicial order, then Illinois statute takes effect and controls. So if New York said, well, you don't have to register here as a matter of our statutory law, which is not the case here, but Illinois had a different statute that was more encompassing, then the Illinois statute would control. The distinction under the full faith and credit clause is between statutory rules and judicial judgments. Statutory rules can change from state to state. Each legislature in each state can define its sex offender registration laws as it sees fit. So Illinois can be more or less encompassing than New York. As long as it is just a question of statutory interpretation, then Illinois law controls. However, if once you go beyond a statute and get into the realm of judgments, the full faith and credit clause is interpreted much more strictly. It requires absolute fealty, is a common expression in the Supreme Court cases. So when you induce somebody to enter a plea in one state based on a promise that you will not have to register, and a plea agreement signed off by the judge saying you do not have to register, then that judgment is binding everywhere. Illinois is not allowed to say, well, we're going to pick the plea part where you admit your guilt and enforce that and ignore the rest of the plea agreement contract which says, but you can't use it to do this.
But see, the plea agreement didn't affirmatively say that. It didn't have that language, you can't use it, you can't be registered, because as I understand it, at least, paragraph 29, which spelled out the requirement to be registered with all the details, that was struck. And so it was totally silent on the issue of registration.
Well, right? by striking, ordinarily, there's two things in response to your question, Your Honor.
But that's right. It was totally silenced. 29, paragraph 29 was gone. And there was no replacement language like you plead guilty in a new paragraph that says you're not required to register.
That is true.
Not in there. And it didn't say you're not required to register anywhere. That wasn't in there. It's just that 29 was gone and total silence on this.
The language that was stricken was referring to New York registration, right?
Yes.
Not the Illinois registration.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So I don't see why we even have a case here.
Well, I hope we do, and this is the reason that we do. First of all, this comes to the court on a motion to dismiss. So the court has to accept the facts in the complaint as true. And there's more facts in the complaint than the plea agreement. There are facts in the complaint that allege specifically that the promise that was made to the defendant is that he would not have to register anywhere, that he was not going to be required to register anywhere. Now, with respect to the silence
of... How could that promise be made?
Pardon?
That's not within the jurisdiction of a New York court to enter such a judgment.
Even if it were...
New York court has no jurisdiction over Illinois.
New York court does not have jurisdiction over Illinois, but New York court has jurisdiction over what's going to happen with the use of its own plea agreements. New York can control the scope of the use of its plea agreements because New York has just the argument on the opposite side that is involved here is that, well, Illinois has this enormous public policy concern in defining who will have to register and who will not have to register. I agree. Illinois has a legitimate public policy concern. New York, by the same token, has an equally valid public policy concern, and their equally valid public policy concern is this. We have thousands of cases every year, just like all jurisdictions. The vast majority of all criminal cases everywhere that I've ever heard of are disposed of by plea agreements. It's, 50, 70, some in the federal system, I think it's 80 or 90%. So when you have a system that relies on plea agreements and relies on the integrity of the word of the prosecutor and the judge that who's imposing the sentence, then the defendant has a right to rely on that. That's a very valid public concern, state concern that the state of New York has. So the state of New York has the right to control what is happening with its plea agreements. And it
I'm
is not
sure it has any power to decree what's going to happen in Illinois.
It's just decreeing that you can't use our plea agreement to do something like require registration in Illinois. And if I could get back to the...
Let's stick with this full faith and credit because, you don't have any cases that show this sort of novel interpretation that you have on this plea agreement. Most of the time when you're talking about judicial proceedings and orders from one state having effect on another state, they're very different kinds of agreements that we're talking about or orders that are being entered. They're not orders relating to this. You didn't have any case law on this or anything that was even close in terms of criminal.
I don't think there's any case law close to the facts of this case on either side, and I certainly agree.
Let's say any provision of a plea agreement, not just on sexual registration, but let's take some other provision of a plea agreement, a promise is made, say, by New York. Does that promise have to be honored by Illinois? You don't have a case that deals with another subject matter in a plea agreement.
I agree, but I also, Your Honor, suggest that there's no cases contrary to that anywhere. The cases that the defendants are relying on are cases that involve statutory interpretations rather than plea agreements, or judicial orders. There is a distinction. The Nevada versus Hall case from the United States Supreme Court is perhaps the best, most recent example of this. That case, as I understand it, holds that statutes from one state to the next can be interpreted differently. In other words, the statute in that case, the statute of Nevada was not binding on the statute in California. But the judicial order from the state of California was binding in the state of Nevada. Because judicial orders, and that the crux of the difference here is the difference between statutory rules and judicial orders. Judicial orders must be absolutely and faithfully followed. And for that reason, and with, and, well, I see that my time has run out, so I'll.
All right. I'll give you 1 minute. We had a lot of questions for you, Mr. Peters. I'll give you 1 minute in rebuttal. Okay, is that, that's Ms. Welch.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Mary Welch. I'm here on behalf of the defendants. There are three reasons why the Court should affirm the dismissal of the plaintiff's complaint. The first is, of course, the reason that the District Court used, which was that, as Judge Cudahy pointed out, and Judge Williams, the probation order is silent as to any effect in Illinois. And, in fact, as Judge Cudahy pointed out, it couldn't tell Illinois how to enforce the conviction. And this leads to the second reason that it should be enforced, because plaintiff is wrong about how the full faith and credit clause works. The full faith and credit clause works to require other states to recognize the existence of the judgment. This generally goes to the preclusive effect of that judgment. And here, for example, plaintiff could not get, Illinois had to recognize that there was a conviction. Plaintiff couldn't ask to relitigate the fact that he committed the offense for which he was convicted. But as the cases are very clear, and I'll read something from Baker, which plaintiff cites for the proposition that there has to be strict recognition of a judgment. What Baker says is, although the full faith and credit clause requires that states give effect to the judgments of sister states, it does not require that the states adopt the practices of other states with regard to the time, manner, and mechanism for enforcing judgments. So there's a difference between the existence of the judgment, the fact of the conviction, and the enforcement of that. And that's what the probation order here is. It's an enforcement order. It is New York's decision about how to enforce the conviction. And what it did is say that to enforce this conviction, we are not going to require compliance with the New York sex offender registration statute. And I will also point out that in our brief, we mentioned that, as far as I can tell, in the People versus Vasquez case from New York, New York wouldn't have required registration for this particular offense. In his reply brief, plaintiff says that it was discretionary with the court, but he didn't provide any authority for that. So as far as I know, as far as the Vasquez case tells us that this particular offense does not trigger the registration requirement at all. Now, but again, this is with regard to how New York decided to enforce this conviction. And New York law, even if it's discretionary, New York law can be discretionary with regard to how to enforce the time, place, and manner of the enforcement of its sex offender registration. But it wouldn't bind, its law doesn't bind Illinois from enforcing its sexual offender registration laws. And we know that New York would not order Illinois to comply with or to waive its sex registration orders or laws, because when New York was asked whether it had to follow Ohio law in the Ariton case that we cite, New York said, no, we follow for our residents, for New York residents, we follow New York law, regardless of what Ohio did with regard to its conviction for this guy. Once the guy who was convicted in Ohio moved to New York, he had to comply with New York law. And Ariton was quite clear about this. Ariton says the full faith and credit clause doesn't require enforcing Ohio law in New York. It's not offended by enforcing New York law against this Ohio person who was convicted once the Ohio guy moved to New York.
is Illinois law, I guess, when someone moves in and they have to register if they have some level of sex offense, I guess.
Right. If it's a comparable, they compare the elements of the offense, and if it's a comparable offense, then they have to register.
How is that disclosed? I mean, is someone carry that with them? They have an obligation when they move, or is there something? How do you find out that this guy is here, for example?
I don't know how they found out in this case, although I know that the probation order did say that the plaintiff had to, one of the terms of the probation order was that he had to tell the post office, the local police, of his conviction. So it could have happened that way, although there was quite a time lag between the 2003 conviction and the registration requirement.
So the requirement,
we don't know why that happened.
There is some period of time, then if he moves, he got to tell him what the new address is. Is that the deal, or is there some? I'm just curious how this
works
from state to state.
We don't know from the complaint. I mean, it wasn't. All we know is that there was a time lag in between, and I confess I'm not sure how it works. I do know that according to the probation order, plaintiff was required to tell his local police that he was that he had been convicted of this sex offense
in Illinois.
Yes, I mean it required him to tell his local. I mean it didn't specify. It just said you are required to tell your local police people that you have committed this crime,
regardless of the locale.
Yes. Well, apparently the if you look at the plea agreement, it does mention, it indicates that there was an understanding that he didn't live in Westchester County anymore. If you look at paragraph 10, which is RA3, it says, you shall reside in Westchester County or residing somewhere, the probation department thing that has a sex abuse division capable of, requiring you to follow these conditions. So there was an understanding, apparently, the plaintiff lived here even though he had committed the offense in New York State.
Okay.
Right. So to go back, there are three reasons. One is the silence of the probation order. The second is that the probation order is really the enforcement of the conviction, and the United States Supreme Court has said that states do not have to enforce another state's order if it conflicts with the public policy of the home of the non-rendering state. And the third reason is, and I just realized this, I confess today, that what plaintiff is saying, if you look at his reply brief, he says, the full faith and credit clause requires Illinois to honor the plea agreement. Well, the plea agreement isn't a judgment. The plea agreement is an agreement between a prosecutor and a defendant. And remember, even the court, the New York court, didn't have to honor a plea agreement. A plea agreement is a contract, as plaintiff recognized in his brief, between himself and the New York prosecutor. And so the remedies for that are the Santabello remedies. If you were induced, as plaintiff alleged, if he was induced to enter into this plea agreement with the understanding or told or whatever that he would not have to register anywhere, then that's a Santabella problem. It's not a full faith and credit problem, because that's a problem with his contract with his prosecutor. And the remedies for that are not to require a third party, Illinois, to comply with the contract that these two other parties had. He can either withdraw his plea, or he can ask for specific performance from the New York prosecutor. He can't ask a third party, the Illinois, the Illinois officials, to honor his plea agreement. And the court might also be aware that in front of the Supreme Court right now, there's a case about whether this is a Strickland problem. In Padilla versus Kentucky, which was argued last month, the court was asked to decide whether improper advice about the collateral consequences, and again, this is a civil collateral consequence of plaintiff's conviction, whether civil collateral consequences, misadvice about civil collateral consequences, pose a Strickland problem, a Sixth Amendment problem. But again, so really, if plaintiff has a problem with the plea agreement, it's not that the full faith and credit clause applies to plea agreements. It doesn't. It applies to judgments. And so plaintiff, if plaintiff has a plea agreement problem, he has to go back to New York And or, as this court indicated in Lowry, he has to go to the Illinois courts and ask them to decide whether Illinois is improperly applying Illinois law. But he does not have a full faith and credit problem if it's the plea agreement. I don't have anything more to say unless the court has questions. We ask that the court affirm for any one of the three reasons I've given. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. Mr. Peters, you have 1 minute.
May I first go back to Judge Cudahy's question, which I don't think I effectively answered before. It's not that the New York court has jurisdiction, per se, to order Illinois to do something. It's that when the New York court enters an order, the full faith and credit clause, independent of New York jurisdiction, compels Illinois to comply with the New York court's order. So it's not a question of New York's jurisdiction over Illinois. It's a question of enforcing the New York court's judgment in Illinois pursuant to the full faith and credit clause. With respect to the Santabello plea agreement argument, I think it should be clear from the briefs that what we were saying is the plea agreement resulted in a final judgment, and it's the judgment that is at issue, not the plea agreement. It's not a Santabello issue with New York. New York is doing everything they're supposed to do. The problem is the judgment isn't being enforced here pursuant to the full faith and credit provisions. And lastly, with respect to Judge Williams' questions about striking of paragraph 29, I certainly agree it didn't add those other words to it. But the fact of striking it, in addition to what we've alleged in the complaint, sets up a complaint that alleges all of the necessary facts for a full faith and credit argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Thank you for your fine arguments this morning, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.